Like, I was very pleased with Summer League, especially for this year's rookie class. I thought it was a great turnout for Summer League. It had to be one of the highest
attended events.
Yeah, that I've seen since I've been attending Summer League.
Rick Bucher.
Where you were staying four seasons? Where
you're really
were you?
Always concerned about where I'm staying.
You're really concerned about what I'm saying.
Well, I want to make sure that you're taking care of. I want to make sure you're living the lifestyle that is appropriate for BJ Armstrong, three-time NBA champ.
I was in Vegas.
Why are you embarrassed to admit that you are she? You know? So you're not gonna tell us where you stay?
No, I don't want to.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 44th episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong. BJ, we are in the middle of the summer. This is usually a quiet time for the NBA, but based on all the events that you've been involved in, I get the sense that you've still been working hard as ever. How unusual is it that you're still signing guys, and we're talking about the end of July, almost the beginning of August?
Well, I think it's a new era, Rick. I think this free agency, if you will, brand new. And when I say brand new, there's new rules, there's a new system. And I think systematically, you have to think differently than you had to think in the past as far as signing free agents. But more importantly, what is their value as you approach free agency? So, but as always, things tend over time to work themselves out, and it gives you a new outlook on how to approach things. And I think this was a very unique situation where I think it's not just one or two guys. I think it's systematically throughout the league that it's a new era. It's a new time. It's a new age in the NBA. And I think everyone has to take notice of what happened and how to approach it moving forward.
I got to thinking of obviously one of your clients, Derrick Rose, signed in Cleveland, and Stephon Marbury came out and was aghast, disappointed, upset, critical of the fact that there are guys out there that are making way more money than Derrick Rose will be this season. Now, in one respect, I think that's a compliment to Derrick Rose and what Stephon Marbury thinks of him. At the same time, it's like, he couldn't get paid what some people think is his worth. How did you take Steph's comments?
Well, I didn't get a chance to see Steph's comments. I didn't read them
I think he just tweeted it out. He just said basically there's guys who can't walk and chew gum who are getting paid more than Derrick Rose, and that's upsetting. And that's wrong, essentially.
Again, Rick, Stephon, and I remember Steph when he first came in this league as a rookie. And, that was then and this is now. It's a new day. And change is inevitable. And certainly now it's a new NBA where players who got paid last year, we can look at the numbers in the previous summer free agency. And then if you want to make a comparison, how that compares to this year, certainly you have that. But that's not the case. Here are the facts. The facts are it's a new era. It's a new day. And all of us who deal with this, meaning agents and NBA personnel and executives around the league, understand the ramifications of what this new collective bargaining agreement, what happened. And now you're seeing the effects of it. So I can't, as an agent, afford to think that way. I would love for the what guys got paid last year or the year before to get paid this year, but that's not the case. And now I have to move forward and prepare my clients for this new era and how to navigate it so that they can function and really optimize their opportunities that they have moving forward.
I've talked to other agents, and obviously you had this huge influx of TV money that came in, which is one of the reasons why we saw some of the contracts signed a year ago that were so big for everybody across the board. And there was a push by the league to introduce that TV money to smooth it out, to bring it in at a tempered level. As you look at it now, is that something, and that was something obviously the players' union resisted, would the league have been, as you see things now, and you know, hindsight obviously is 2020, would the league have been better served, at you from your perspective as an agent, would the league have been better served if they had introduced that money in a more gradual way?
Well, it's kind of a yes and no. You know, again, I don't want to criticize the union, and I said what I had to say when it was first done, and now you get past it and you get through it. You know what? I'm going to take the union. They did the very best job that they can do. Certainly, they were able to strike a deal that the players, again, I will say that the players ratified and they agreed upon. And now let's deal with it and let's move forward. So it doesn't serve me or anyone at this point to criticize anyone, especially the union and what they did. They did the best job they could under the circumstances they were under. And now we move forward. So it is certainly a deal that has all of the bells and whistles or the appearance to have the freedom for players to move. Now it's just a matter of the decision makers, the teams, to actually utilize those rules and, you know, and all the things that the players fought for so that they can optimize those. But more importantly, that these players can get paid what they feel that they're worth. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Maybe this is just a one-off. Maybe it's a self-correcting market where it's going to self-correct itself and next year it'll be different. So we'll see. But, you know, it's certainly this was kind of eye-opening to a lot of players. I think the executives and all the people around looked at it and said, wow. But you know what? In the same time, you know, we'll adjust and we'll make the necessary steps and we'll move forward going from here.
All right. I do want to get some of the more immediate news of the day. And the one that's still hanging out there and still remains to be seen and is tied into our special guest for this podcast, Scott Perry. Friend of the program now. We interviewed him last when he was, after he was let go by Orlando, signed with Sacramento Kings, and now he finds himself as the GM of the New York Knicks running that show. And I say he's tied to this next subject because it's all about Carmelo Anthony and the speculation, rumors, possibilities of him going to the Houston Rockets or being dealt. I think both of us are on the side of believing that Carmelo Anthony, respecting his game, being more positive about what he's capable of as a player, even at this point, than some people are. That said, like Chris Paul, James Harden, Carmelo Anthony, I respect all of their games. It's not a combination that I look at and say, wow, that could create problems for the Golden State Warriors, or that is talent-wise a team that I would expect to be in the conference finals. Each of them in their own right I respect as players and as talents. I'm not convinced that those three talents mesh in the seamless way that we've seen other teams that have the aspirations that the Rockets obviously do in bringing them together. Am I missing something, or am I not giving enough credence that they will adjust to each other like we saw, you know, when the three amigos came together in Boston 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago?
The thing is, we're in a new era and we play a different brand of basketball. Okay, there's three things happening in an NBA game today that when I watch the game, this is all that's going on. You shoot threes, you shoot layups, okay, and you get to the free throw line. That's it. Now, if you shoot threes, James Harden can do that. Carmelo can do that. And certainly CP3 can do that. They both can get to the basket and score. And they both shoot a high percentage at the free throw, all three of them. Now, by the analytics, remember, now the game is played much differently than it was played, you know, some time ago. All the fans and all the listeners that are listening, the NBA game doesn't start until the last 4 minutes of an NBA game. Because that's when you have to defend. That's when the game turns up. You have to rebound to limit their possession, and you have to get the best shot possible because everyone's playing as hard as they can possibly do in the regular season game. Now, in the regular season, that trio is going to win a lot of games for them because they can score a lot of points and they're versatile enough to do it. They can score. Now, when you get to talking about championship caliber basketball, where people have to defend their position, where people have to rebound at the position, and people have to minimize their dribbles. You know, I can't just dribble 20 times in one possession. I have to do two or three seconds, and I have to move the ball on. Now the game is played a little different, which you and I are talking about. Now, do I think this is a championship caliber move for them? No. Will they win 50-something games or more in the regular season? Yes. And to many people now, that is a successful season, winning 55 games. And then they'll figure it out after they win the 50 games. Rick, the game is coached different. It's played different. You see threes, which everyone is shooting out. Guys who can't even shoot are shooting threes.
Well, and if you can't shoot a three, you are, I mean, I look at guys around the league, and I think Derek was maybe a little subject to this.
Derek was the number two player in the entire league last year at getting to the basket. In the entire league, and he did that in a system that didn't encourage people to get to the basket. He did it in a system called the triangle offense. So if you look at the way the game is played, that's all you're seeing right now. And the best teams take advantage of that, and they also defend. And the two best teams right now are the Golden State Warriors, who shoot threes as well as anyone. They get to the basket as well as anyone. And they get to the free throw line. Their best players shoot a very high percentage. Now, in addition to that, they're also an incredible defensive team. They do all the things that a great team is supposed to do. And then you go to the East, and the other team that does that, Kyrie and LeBron get to the basket and shoot threes, and they have Kyle Korver and these guys as well as anyone.
Let's go to the second quarter very quickly, and this ties in to you talking about how the game has changed. And I look at, and this has to do with the situation in Cleveland with Kyrie Irving, indications, rumors, however you want to label them, that that he's not happy in Cleveland, that he's looking to potentially be traded. And it got me to thinking, because of your experience, BJ, with Scotty and Michael, and I look at, you could give some other examples. I think John Stockton and Karl Malone fit into the category. Sean Kemp and Gary Payton, where we've seen two superstars coexist and find a way to take advantage of each other and not get to a point where there's a battle as far as who's number one and what the pecking order is. In looking at your experience with Scotty and Michael, why did that pairing work where you could look at others, KG and Steph, maybe Kyrie and LeBron fit into this category? We've had some other situations where stars could not exist for a long period of time.
Well, there's no replacement for experience. And when I look at a team, and I learned this lesson very quickly when I came into the NBA, when you are building a team, you know, all the media and all the accolades always goes to the number one guy. And in this instance, you're talking about Michael Jordan. He's the leader. He's the go-to guy. But if you're building a team and if you're playing on a team, the most important player is always the number two guy. Because if the number two guy wants to be the number one guy, you have a major, major problem. Because the number two guy has enough talent to disrupt the team. And wherever you see a number two guy who wants to be the number one guy, you can cross that team off the list. Okay, and when I look at a team now, I always look at the number two guy. And when I look at the Golden State Warriors, the number two guy was Klay Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Before they had Kevin Durant. Was it really Klay Thompson or was it Draymond Green? Because it was just such a unique...
Well, that's what's special about them even now.
Exactly.
I mean, you got KD, you got Steph, you got Klay, you got Draymond, you got all kinds of guys who in one way or the other could make a case for being number one or number two. And you got guys that are probably fitting three and four, and they found a way to make it work.
Yeah, and when I look at their team, that team to me, I was like, that's a really good team. Because I can look at 2, 3, 4, and 5, and they got it all figured out. Now, when I look, you know, the when I saw LeBron James and Dwayne Wade when they first went down, when he first went down to Miami, I thought the most important decision that was made down there is when Dwayne Wade accepted being the number two guy. when he just accepted and said, we need LeBron James to be the number one guy if we're ever going to win. They had the talent. The talent was there. But who's going to be the number two guy so that everyone can do their role? Because everyone clearly has a role on the team if you're going to have success.
Yeah. So how did it work with Scottie and Michael? Well, how did they end up staying together as long as they did and winning six championships? Because obviously there was a lot of ego there, and there were times where I remember in covering that team where you got the feeling that Scottie did want to be recognized in a bigger way.
You know, I don't think Scottie would mind me saying this, and I'm not saying it to be critical. There was no question who the number one guy and who the number two guy was, because we had two different teams, all right? We had the starting team, which was they played a certain way, and then we had the second unit. And when we were playing in the early 90s, everyone had to execute in the half court, right? And you had to have a big who was in the post. And that big for us was Bill Cartwright. And then you had to learn how to play in half court sets because everyone play defense a certain way. You know, if you're going to win, you had to execute in half court, especially against the Detroit Pistons, because they were the reigning champion at that time.
Right.
Then you had to play a certain way when the backups came in the game, the substitutes came in the game, because the game was a different game. It was a different challenge. Phil Jackson and his staff picked up on very early, and I think a lot of coaches picked up on it. You had a team that executed in the half court, and then you had a team that could play and get as easy shots, especially in transition, that you can possibly get.
Right.
And if you ever watch the Bulls play, especially early on, whichever one had it going in early, the other one would come out of the game. So if Scottie had it going early because he had the matchup, Michael Jordan would actually be the guy who anchored the second unit.
Hmm.
And then Michael Jordan would come out of the game with about 4 minutes to go in the first quarter. Scottie would play the first 12 minutes, and then Michael would pick up on, and then we would try to crush you in the third quarter after you were trying to figure out how we were going to play. So I think Scottie and Michael had an opportunity for 20 to 25 minutes every night to play by themselves. They never were competing with each other except in the last 4 minutes of the game, and I don't think anyone would argue that Michael Jordan was the best at finishing a game.
Right.
So for many coaches and for many players, I think it's about finding the right combination to allow guys to play independently of one another, and then you bring them together. And if you watch the Warriors this year, there was no doubt in my mind what Steve Kerr was doing. He was finding a way to allow Steph or Kevin Durant to play independent of one another. And then whenever Klay had it going, they would play through Klay, because Draymond doesn't need the ball to impact the game. And it was just incredible to watch. I don't think this is complicated, but somehow now we've complicated the game to where everyone has to play with each other and there's only one ball. But the great teams all find a way to play independent of one another.
Okay, that is the end of the second quarter. We now have some halftime entertainment thanks to our producer, Shane Freeman. Enjoy.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, it's the halftime break on the BJ and Bucher podcast, and I hope you guys enjoyed today's halftime entertainment by Ice Cube. This song is called It Was a Good Day. If you don't know this record, then you will by the time you're done listening to it, because it's real laid back, sampling the Isley Brothers. But I hope you guys enjoy it, because today is a good day to be listening to the BJ and Bucher podcast.
Just waking up in the morning, gotta thank God. But today seems kinda odd. No barking from the dog, no small. And mama cooked the breakfast with no hog. I got my grub on, but didn't dig out. Finally got a call from a girl I wanted to find it. Hooked it up for later as I hit the dough. Thinking, will I live another 24? I gotta go, cause I got me a drop top. And if I hit the switch, I can make the ass drop. Had to stop. Looking in my mirror, not a jacker in sight. And everything is alright. I got a beat from Kim, and she can fuck all night. Called up the homies and I'm asking y'all, which part are y'all playing basketball? Get me on the court and I'm troubled. Last week, hooked around and got a triple-double. Freaking niggas every way like MJ. I can't believe today was a good day. We'll be right back.
tried to blast me. Saw the police and they rolled right past me. No flexing, didn't even look in a different direction as I ran the intersection. Went to Show Dog's house, they was watching you on TV raps. What's the haps on the cracks? Shake 'em up, shake 'em up, shake 'em up, shake 'em. Roll 'em in a circle, let's stick in and watch me break 'em with the 7-Eleven, even backdoor little Joe. I picked up the cash flow, then we played bones, and I'm yelling domino. Plus nobody I know got killed in South Central LA. Today was a good day.
All right, it's the third quarter. You know what that means. It's time for the trivia challenge. Today's subject is epic trades, and I have a feeling that this means, on at least on my part, we are looking at a epic fail, because I don't remember these to save my ass, especially when it comes to the details.
Just take this ill and go home, Rick. Just take this ill and go home.
You know what? I would normally say that, but even when I haven't felt confident, I've walked away with a victory, so I'm still going to play the game, because you just never know.
Never know. I'm focused right now, Rick. I'm focused. Okay, let me just show you I'm focused.
Are you focused? Here we go. You know what? I've never wanted to cheat on one of our trivia challenges. I never have. This was the first time where I was, damn, man, I need to look some stuff up.
Well, good.
I don't know. Anyway,
tell the listeners that you've been cheating, Rick. Just tell us. Don't act like you want to. Just tell the listeners you have.
I've never cheated. Come on, I've known at times when we go to a certain, when I see the rundown and we're going to go to a certain area, and I'm thinking, okay, I've done some work on this recently. I think I might have an edge. But other than that, no, I've never Googled anything. And now that I think about it, BJ, you're the one when we do this. A lot of time passes, man. A lot of keyboard tapping in the background. I'm not saying you're cheating. I'm just saying. All right, let's go. February 6th, 2008. That was a good day. Which two players, I can tell you exactly where I was on February 6, 2008. That's what's scary. Which two players were traded to the Miami Heat in exchange for Shaquille O'Neal? A, Rajah Bell and Alondo Tucker. B, Sean Marion and Marcus Bank. C, Sean Marion and Sean Marks. D, Alondo Tucker and Brian Skinner.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of names, a lot of information.
Which two players were traded
to Miami for Shaquille O'Neal on February 6, 2008?
Okay, can you give me the A again?
A was Rajah Bell and Alondo Tucker.
Okay. B?
Sean Marion and Marcus Banks.
Marcus Banks, that was the little guard, right?
Yes. Sean Marion and Sean Marks was C. D was Alondo Tucker and Brian Skinner.
I'm just going to say C. I have no idea.
That would be Sean Marion and Sean Mark.
Yes.
That would be incorrect. It was Sean Marion.
Indeed.
But it was Sean Marion and Marcus Banks.
Marcus Banks was the little guard.
Yes. And I was going to a parent-teachers conference at my kids' elementary school, and I was like on the phone chasing this trade at the time, stepping out, having to be on the phone, doing an ESPN hit. That's why I remember distinctly where I was and what I was doing. All right.
In 2011, which of these players did not get traded to the Knicks with Carmelo Anthony? A, Corey Brewer. B, Raymond Felton. C, Sheldon Williams. D, Rinaldo Balkman.
Ooh, see, that's a trick question. That's a trick question. Because Rinaldo Balkman was
where were you in 2011, Rick?
Boy. 2011 on that day? That's a good question. I don't know. I don't have that one. But the answer is Rinaldo Balkman, because he was drafted by the New York Knicks.
That would be incorrect.
What?
The answer is B, Raymond Felton was sent to the Nuggets.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, he was with the Knicks and he went the other way?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Balkman wasn't drafted by the Knicks?
Yeah, he was actually drafted by the Knicks, but then he got traded away, and then he came back to the Knicks with Carmelo in that trade.
All right, let's move on to three.
In 2001, which of these players was traded to the 76ers with Dikembe Mutombo? Tony Kukoc, Theo Ratliff, Rashawn McLeod, Pepe Sanchez. I always like Pepe Sanchez just because I liked his name, Pepe Sanchez.
Say that again. Which of these players did get traded?
Which one of these players was traded to the 76ers with Dikembe Mutombo? Tony Kukoc, Theo Ratliff, Rashawn McLeod, Pepe Sanchez.
I'm just going to say Rashawn McLeod. I have no idea.
And that would be correct. Ding, 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 ding.
Good guess, man. Good guess.
I have no idea.
Was that a guess, BJ? Was that a guess? Was that a guess?
Yeah, well, I know it couldn't have been Tony Kukoc.
Really?
You know, I remember it couldn't have been Tony Kukoc. Who, Pepe Sanchez. I remember.
You don't even know that. Backup point guard.
Yeah. Theo Ratliff. Who was the other guy? And Theo Ratliff. I was like, you're not going to trade two centers.
Good point.
Yeah, so that was my way of thinking. So,
good point.
Yeah, well done. Process of elimination.
Yes.
All right.
Deductive reasoning.
Okay.
Which of these players
was traded to the Boston Celtics in the three-team trade on February 19th, or I remember where I was at, 2004, that sent Rasheed Wallace to the Detroit Pistons? Oh, I remember exactly where I was at.
Okay.
A, Chris Mills. B, Chucky Atkins. C, Bob Sura. D, Mike James. Oh, I remember exactly what I was doing. I remember this. I remember the dinner I had that night. I remember that. February 19th.
Wow, what'd you have for dinner that night?
I had a little seafood. Little seafood. Little pasta primavera. I remember that. I remember that.
Oh, God. Okay. So say the question again.
Which of these players was traded to the Boston Celtics in the three-team trade on February 19th, 2004, that sent Rasheed Wallace to the Detroit Pistons?
I'm just going to say... Oh, man. What's the guy's name? Bobby what?
It was Bob Sura.
Yeah, I'm going to say Bob Sura.
And new champion of the world! All I do is win, win. I'm gonna sing this song. All I do is win, win. That's all I do.
See, Chang,
Chang,
this is what happens when you give me the jacked up questions and you give him the good ones. This is why it's better that I win for all of us.
Let the record be set straight that I said it before that I was gonna get focused and let this happen. Now, I always let Rick win because, you know, he gets
you win,
about
Rick.
Here we go.
Now, I'm about to go on a run here just to let you know, Rick.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it. I'm doing it on the real. I ain't even looking it up on Google. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Okay, Scotty. We know who the real number one is. And with that, I've never wanted to get to the fourth quarter. I always enjoy our fourth quarter conversations with our guests, but today in particular, can't wait to get there. Scott Perry, GM of the New York Knicks, friend of the program. I caught up with him to talk about this whirlwind that he's been in, going from leaving Orlando to Sacramento and now in charge of the New York Knicks, and exactly what he's going to rely on from his past experience in order to get the Knicks where it has been quite some time they have been. And that's competitive and somewhere at the top of the league. Enjoy the conversation. I am now joined by our very, very special guest, one Scott Perry, the new general manager of the New York Knicks. Congratulations. Last time we spoke officially as far as the podcast is concerned, we had you on after you were leaving Orlando. It's been a whirlwind. Hired by the Sacramento Kings, there for 3 months, do a great job with them with the draft, and now you're with the New York Knicks. So I don't know, Scott, can you compare what's happened to you over the last 3-4 months to anything else that you've experienced in your career?
No, I must admit, Rick, first of all, thank you for having me back on again. Here with you and BJ, I really appreciate it. But this is quite a unique experience. When you're in this business as long as I've been, you obviously changed jobs and moved I've moved across country before, but to have moved cross country twice, if you will, in a matter of 3.5 months, that's been a unique experience, but one that I've embraced, and I've been thankful to a lot of people. I'm thankful to a lot of people that have helped make that happen and helped, you know, first of all, the people in Sacramento. Have great appreciation for Vlade Divac there and the owner of Vivek Rana Dive, and just how they accepted me and treated me there, and really liked the direction that team is heading, and was able to help get them on what I believe is the right path. And then just very thankful to, you know, Steve Mills and the New York Knicks for bringing me in here to realize the goal and dream of mine and become a general manager in this league, and looking forward to the challenge. And probably the person I need to thank the most is my wife, who's been right in the midst of this moving back and forth in the country, and been extremely supportive and logistically sound and trying to keep us both sane.
Well, way to cross those T's and dot all those I's, making sure that you recognize that the wife has had a huge influence on all of this. You and I have talked about this over the years and long felt like you deserve the opportunity. And what's so striking in this situation is that you were in Orlando previously, you were in Oklahoma City, Seattle, you were in Detroit, and have been waiting a long time for this opportunity. And then Sacramento, I felt as if, you know, that might be the shot. And for the first time, and maybe getting as much influence as you've ever had. I don't know. You could answer that better. But that it's suddenly it's Sacramento opportunity pops up and then New York pops up. Is there any explanation, do you think, for why that opportunity didn't happen, and then there's almost like two in a row that are giving you a chance to show what you can really do?
Well, I don't know if there's a full explanation that I can come to. But I guess the best way that I can describe it to you, Rick, is that each and every one of us has our own particular journey. And this has happened to be my journey. And my journey has been one that I have not skipped a step. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go back into the beginning of me working in basketball, when I was a high school coach for a couple of years. Then went on to become a college coach and moved up the ranks in college coaching, and then started as a scout in the NBA, and then director of scouting and player personnel, assistant GM, vice president title. So I feel a great deal of pride that I haven't skipped any steps. I think it's really helped prepare me this moment and this opportunity to help restore and lead a franchise, and so that's, you know, that's been my path. I mean, I've had a lot of success along the way in the NBA, especially those years in Detroit when we were so good and became champions, and learned a lot from that. And then I learned a lot at all of my stops, and just in terms of I think rounding out me professionally. For sure, to be prepared to take over a job like this in New York.
And ultimately, what do you think is it's going to take for this Knicks franchise to get back to, you know, where you had that Pistons group where they were perennially, when they became champions? I mean, I look at the Knicks fans and the history of this franchise, and there's proud, passionate fans, but man, it has been one hell of a dry spell. What has to happen for the Knicks to reclaim or claim what you had in Detroit and what they eventually was put together in Oklahoma City?
I think what you know, Steve Mills and I've talked a great deal about this, and just having a unified vision and focus and plan about how we want to move forward. The type of players that we want to be in, bring in, the style of basketball that we want to play, and then just remain consistent and committed to that, and adding the quality young people in here to go along with some established veterans so that you can continue to grow. I mean, we want a culture of development. Development is, is hugely important in our game today, especially when you have a number of young players on your roster. So, and just being consistent in what we do each and every day, that's how you establish a culture that is conducive to winning. You know, a lot of teams and organizations can put slogans up on the wall or in a pamphlet that they hand out to everybody that works there. And all those slogans sound great, but when you're talking about winning and building a winning culture, it's about how you walk and operate every single day. And that's got to be with consistency. It's got to be hard work. And again, a commitment to do it together. You know, one of the things that we talked about here and I've, you know, establishing this front office here, you know, hey, we're going to encourage diversity thought, but with unity of purpose. And that's going to be, you know, how we go about our business. And we're going to be consistent about how we go out about our business each and every day. And ultimately, that yields an environment conducive to winning, you know. And part of that, too, is being able to, you know, draft well, find the right free agents, and also make any moves as it relates, you know, to anything else and how you can build your basketball team.
What does it mean to be part of the first, as far as I know, the first all-Black front office as far as the leadership, having the top two positions in an NBA franchise? Because if I'm not mistaken, this is for as many Blacks that are playing the league and have been involved in the league, that this is historic in a way.
Well, you know, from coming from a family like I came from, and in particular, my father, who was the first African-American coach in the modern NFL, the fact that you just brought up is not lost on me. There's a gravity of feeling and responsibility, I think, that comes with that. You know, ultimately, I know, wouldn't want it in any other way, and I know Steve feels this way, that we're going to be judged on not on our color, how well we perform at our jobs. But while saying that, though, I also recognize the responsibility and the role that we've been placed in, because for me, and, you know, when I was growing up as a young kid, my dad always talked about, you know, leaving an impact, leaving a legacy, and helping others. So if we can come in here and do the type of job that is well respected across this league, basically, that's going to open up an opportunity for a young Black kid who aspires to be in the front office one day, who wasn't a former NBA player, who just, you know, so I know that, so I take that very seriously. I'm going to be one of the ones, you know, trying to make a difference in that way and hopefully open up doors for future aspiring executives who happen to be Black Americans.
Very well said. So last thing before I let you go, I really appreciate you taking the time. The one thing I've always thought about the Knicks is that they're always, you talked about you didn't skip any steps. I've always felt as if the Knicks, in their urgency to respond to their fans, to get back on top, to sort of live up to the image of the city and maybe the franchise's history in the view of it being a champion, is that they've tried to shortcut the system. They've tried to make big, bold moves that were suddenly going to get them there. And for the most part, that has not transpired. How do you go about building this thing into a winner and learn from maybe the past history when it comes to the organization?
I'm approaching this job, and like I've done everywhere else I've been, I'm a guy that looks forward. You know, whatever has gone on in the past, I really can't comment on or really have a real perspective on. What I can tell you is that we're committed to doing this thing consistently, doing it the right way, in a very prudent fashion, continue to use all the basketball acumen that our group pass, move this team forward, and make the very best, you know, decisions that we think are going to make this a winning basketball team, and not do it for no other reason but that. So that's kind of how I see it. And hopefully that's going to be good enough to help make this team good.
Well, Scott, having known you over the years and knowing your work, I have no doubt that given the opportunity to do this and do it in the way that you've done everything else, that you will get the Knicks back on top. Wish you the best of luck. Thank you again for taking the time. I know this is a busy time and a lot of people are pulling on you. We'll check in down the road when we have some exciting things to talk about with the Knicks' ascension to wherever it's going.
I look forward to that, Dick. Thank you so much and continue great work you guys do on this podcast.
Thank you. All right.
Hope you enjoyed that. Hope you got something out of it. If you're listening, remember, if you're listening on iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show. Rate the show. Leave us a message. Let us know how we're doing. You can also check out our website, bjandbuecher.com. We have videos, audio, written word, all sorts of stuff there to keep you up to date on what's going on in the NBA. And, of course, you can follow the show on Twitter, at bjandbuecher. Thanks for listening. We'll come back at you again next week.